And my wife, Pam, she had bad dementia and she eventually passed away. And obviously I thought my life had finished, but it hadn't.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the United Podcast. I'm Sam Homewood and with me is...
Helen.
Myself and Helen.
Yeah.
There you go.
That was awful.
Yeah, Helen wasn't saying myself and Maisie, was she?
No, she never would. She was supposed to self-hold first.
Are you both good?
Yes. Just on the back of the Liverpool game, aren't we, in the league?
Yeah.
Exciting, wasn't it?
Been a chaotic few games.
It has. Carnage. But we've come out on top on both, which is good. Anyway, what are we doing here?
Well, I think Helen can tell us.
Yes, this is very exciting for me. Because we all know that I do love Cadbury's. Not just saying that for effect. I even take my own Cadbury's on holiday. Do you know that?
Do you?
I do. I pack it in my suitcase.
The thing is, I really believe that.
No, like that's what I do. Because the chocolate
melts.
Sometimes you can't get it in other places.
It does melt.
Not that I go very far places, but you
I mean,
know,
it looks like you eat a lot of chocolate as well. Like,
do I love chocolate?
Exactly.
I'm always eating chocolate. Yeah. So today is very special for lots of people, but particularly for me. We've teamed up with Cadbury's today to bring you an episode on reminiscing about our early United memories and some very special guests who will be joining us very soon. Cadbury's and Manchester United are national treasures, especially to me. They've always been, if you think about it, Cadbury's has always been in your life, like Manchester United.
Yeah, it has. It has.
Exactly.
This ties in well. So my gran used to buy me a bag of sweets and my brothers would get a bag of sweets once a week. And then as we got older, my brothers would then be like, actually, I'll just take the cash. I stuck with my bag of sweets. And I say that ties in well.
And when does that stop?
But it has
Still
stopped.
Get it now?
Don't get it now because she has died. She passed away from Alzheimer's. And Cadbury's, to celebrate their 200th anniversary, are working with Alzheimer's Research UK to support people living with Alzheimer's. That Fantastic. Did tie in quite well.
It did. It wasn't something very link, close but... to a lot of people's hearts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You just don't know when it's coming and as soon as it comes, that's it.
So today we will share our own early United memories. We'll also hear United memories from you, our podcast listeners, and as I said, some very special guests. And we'll hear some Cadbury competition entries from fans as well. And we're also going to pay a tribute to Tom Clare, someone who many people will be very aware of, a very special United fan and author of Manchester United books, who sadly is no longer with us. So let's start with what I said, Maisie. First United memories for you?
Manchester
born and bred. Yeah.
Manchester derbies. And then the other one would be the Barcelona game here at Old Trafford.
The one with the unbelievable atmosphere.
Captain Marvel, Brian Robson.
He always says that was the best atmosphere he ever witnessed.
Yeah. That's probably my first. Watching cup finals. United were in the 80s, predominantly a cup team. So, yeah, That'd be my first real memories of United growing up. And having two brothers, both United fans, and my dad, United fan, mum, United fan. And got it rammed down my throat, really.
Worked out pretty well, didn't it?
First memories were my brother watching Manchester United videos, VHS, on repeat. My dad used to just make him watch George Best videos, and he watched them every day. And when you've got older brothers, you're the youngest. You have one TV. So that was probably my first memories. But my first memory, proper memory of watching a game was the 99.
Was it?
Yeah, I know. I did say that.
Oh my
I thought,
God,
that
Helen.
Makes me sound
oh
so
my
young.
God, that sounds
and
so
I remember
old.
My brother hanging. I just remember everybody in the house going crazy. And my brother hanging his Man United shirts out the window. And yeah, I know.
Oh my God, that makes me feel
well,
so
I was,
old. How old are you then? You're about 12 or something?
Yeah, just turned 12.
Oh,
I obviously remember things before that, but that is stands in my mind as a really clear memory.
Go on, you're going to say you was 8, something like
well,
that.
Was
you born?
I was going to say I wasn't born.
Yeah, was you born?
Helen's only a fraction older than me.
All right, Sam. Well, give it away.
You don't look it, though.
I know, thank you.
The thank you was less sincere after energy. I know. I had kits and things, and I remember those kits, and I can remember the news that Eric Cantona had retired and was leaving. And I remember being confused and upset about it. But the first game of football that I can actually remember watching is the Champions League final. My mum was doing the ironing and I was sat on the floor And I remember watching that game. But I can't, I can remember other events.
Oh, yeah, I'm the same. I can remember other games. I can remember Eric Cantona, but
why
I can't
remember. Why is she ironing at 9 o'clock at night? 8 o'clock at night.
Well, mother
that's a strange question.
She's mother of four boys. She didn't have a lot of opportunity.
She had footballs on and she's ironing at 9 o'clock at night.
She had a lot. There was a lot of us. There was a lot of ironing to be done.
Oh my God.
And I'll be honest, we weren't a lot of help.
Right, so that's the earliest football memories.
Mum ironing.
Yeah, well, I was an outlier because my dad raced motorbikes growing up and wasn't that worried about football. And my older brothers played rugby and weren't too worried about football. So I was the first person in the house that was like, this is the best sport in the world. I don't know what all of you have been doing. We need to be watching this all the time.
We were only Man United and only football in our family.
Like, my older brothers had Man United kits. I'm not entirely sure where that came from. Because I think my parents went, well, if you want to do football, this is the team to do. But my granddad, who was the only other proper football fan in my family, was a Wolves fan.
Yes, you told me that before. Right, so that's our earliest football memories. Mm-hmm. Earliest Cadbury memories. It's got to be an Easter egg.
Yeah.
Selection box.
Easter eggs.
God.
Christmas. How many boxes of roses did you used to get at Christmas? I feel like people don't do that as much now. Maybe it's just because I'm older. Do you know sometimes I still buy adults a selection box? Because who doesn't love a selection box?
Wait, I'll tell you what, Sam. Have you received one?
No, I haven't. Have you?
Well, exactly, yeah.
I don't know whether we're close enough to actually. Huh?
I've never received any.
Always buying these selection boxes.
Always buying, yeah.
Not got one.
Not one.
Yeah.
How long have I known you? 15 years?
Not a single selection box.
I will make a promise right now to buy you both a selection box because Easter's just gone.
It's too late now.
Well, listen, I've got plenty of Easter eggs. I can donate one to you next week.
I didn't even bring any in.
Not cool.
I remember my mum loves chocolate. Loves chocolate. And she would buy a big bar of chocolate and she'd only have one piece every other night, something like that.
Well, that's self-control.
I know. So she's got this bar of chocolate and I wanted it. And this is a gospel truth. So what I did, I cut a piece of cheese out the same size as the actual bar of chocolate. I ate all the chocolate and I foiled wrapped it back in and I slipped it back into the...
Right, just tell me how old you were before this story continues.
It was like last week.
About 10. She went bananas. It wasn't good, as you could imagine. She just loved that little bar of chocolate or that little piece with a cup of tea later at night. I demolished it and I covered it.
That's shocking.
I know. We still laugh about it. She still remembers it.
Well, I think we've established Cadbury's and Manchester United.
What about the song? A Finger and Fudge. Remember that?
No clue what you're singing there.
No, but go on.
A Finger and Fudge is just to go. A Finger and Fudge is just enough to give your kids a treat. I remember that.
I don't remember that.
Oh my God.
Do you remember a fudge though? I used to get those in my granddad's.
It was a Finger and Fudge.
Yeah,
they
were quite cheap, weren't they?
Yeah, same as like a Freddo.
Yeah, well, Maisie's
searching for a song. I will say, recent Cadbury's memory, about 5 years ago, was discovering that they now do vegan chocolate bars.
Yeah.
That was positive.
Little lad playing Conkers.
Sam, I was going to bring this up, actually.
Cadbury's 1979, this.
Weird we don't remember it.
I find myself
a finger and fudge is just enough to give your kids a treat.
You look so happy.
Do you remember that?
Remember it, boys. That's class. A finger and fudge.
Someone who is cynical would think that was planned. That was not planned. That's just David May.
Imagine, 1979, I was 9 years old.
Exactly, that's why you were
just a different era.
Twinkling your mum and dad's eyes.
Yeah.
Sorry, we did pause there, but let's continue because I've just thought of another memory and Sam's...
I just told you the memory.
What memory?
I just told you the memory. You can't make it up that you've made it up yourself.
Have you ever been to the factory? And I did actually go on a school trip when I was 10 and we visited the Cadbury's factory.
Did you see... Oh, you went?
And that was a big deal because we lived in Belfast, so we had to travel to Birmingham.
Have you not been since?
Not been since.
Oh, you've got to go.
I need to take the
kids. You've got to go. There are big monkeys in there. The big ape playing the Phil Collins.
Oh, that was good effort.
Remember it?
Yeah, I remember that one.
See, always remembers. Tell you.
So now he's locked up in the factory, is he?
He's in there.
Right. So what we're going to do now is we're going to invite friend of the podcast, Jason, who works at the club, and he's going to come and tell us about what he does every 2 weeks at the club with some very special guests. So come on over, Jason.
Jason, welcome to the podcast.
good to
Jason
be
Jason Leach, it has to be said, because we all just know him as Jason. With an A.
L-E-A.
Leach with an A.
C-H, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's a silent A at the beginning. Before we get into this, Jason, just quickly, I think give people an overview of what it is you do for United.
Oh, I'm kind of like utility member of staff. I kind of bob and weave between the lines, but my main role is on main reception at Old Trafford. I tend to do a lot of work on match days. Most of my other tasks involve historical content. I love the history of the football club, you know, where we've come from. The whole sort of heritage and legacy thing with United, which is unlike any other club, really. So, yeah, mainly around historical content.
And that's years of working in the museum as well for you. So it's, you've been around the history of this club for and explaining it to people. And that's why you're a perfect person for what you do every couple of weeks with these very special guests. So can you tell us about what that role is and what it entails?
I think it's around about 4 or 5 years ago in the museum. They used to do a lot of things for groups of children, educational visits and so on, talking about the history of the football club. And then one day they realised that we could do it for any group, really. We wanted to touch base with some of our older fans for various reasons, but also because people who are a bit older can sometimes get lonely. So we wanted to almost create like a social club atmosphere where you come in and talk about your memories and so on, and people suffering from memory loss. So I'd say just before COVID it started, and it was kind of like once every 2 or 3 weeks. COVID obviously stopped the thing in its tracks, and we tried to do like an online version, which was okay, but nothing like getting together with friends and talking about football. And then after COVID, things changed in the museum and they needed someone new to host. And I stepped in about 12, 18 months ago. I love it.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. We basically talk about...
How many people turn up? Is it an invitation? Like, or?
I'd say there's a hardcore of around about 8 to 10 people who come. And
same people?
Mainly, yeah.
Do you see what he's trying to do here, Jason?
I can see what he's doing.
No.
Invites only?
No.
Same people every week?
No. What I'm trying to say is it open to people? Do people have to apply to it? Or?
No, I mean, if you feel like...
If they're interested in coming, how do they get
you? Just get in touch with the club through the museum.
Right.
And we'll get you sorted out. But there's around about 8 to 10 regulars.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, they've got brilliant memories of the football club. My dad used to tell me when I was a young kid about United's history. So I'm very passionate about these stories. And some of the guys that come, they can take you back before the 1950s. For me, I just soak that up. So it's great fun. It's very informative. We're all friends. And what's better than talking about United? So...
For anyone who's listening thinking, oh, actually, that sounds really good for me or maybe my mum or my dad or my auntie or my uncle or whatever, we'll put the information as to how people can get involved in the episode notes so that they can definitely do that.
Yeah.
Tell us about some of the people you've met.
Great characters, because when you've been watching football for 30, 40, 50 years, not only your knowledge and your memories are great, but also you've become, you know, part of the fabric of the club. Two of the boys in particular, Sean and Digger, I've got to say that most of the sessions are usually led by their humour and stories. And listen, it's fantastic to listen to people talk about the Busby Babes and about a young George Best. So George is my hero when I first started coming to Old Trafford with my dad. But to hear about what Besty was like when he first came over, what Dennis was like when he first signed, you know, and a young Nobby Styles, I love this. And these guys can talk about it. Some of the stories, like I say, are really funny. So we spend a lot of our time laughing, having cups of tea and chocolate biscuits, a lot of chocolate biscuits. So the whole environment is more like a get-together with friends. And we try and do it once every 2 or 3 weeks, you know.
Which for elderly people, sometimes they're on their own and a moment like that is so special for them.
It's brilliant. Yeah.
Shall we invite two of those people on? Two people that you have mentioned who are core members of the group, Sean and Digger. Jason, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's welcome Sean and Digger on. Oh, I feel like I'm on a chat show here. That's what we do.
I think it means you start chatting.
Never done this before. Sean and Digger, Welcome to the Manchester United podcast. I'm absolutely delighted to have you both on, mainly because Johnny did a little sit down with you guys a couple of weeks ago at the Reminiscing event.
Yeah.
And he phoned me on the way home and he said, I had the best time ever. And he said, they are so knowledgeable about Manchester United. And I didn't know then that we would be doing this. Mm-hmm. So I just know I'm in for a treat hearing all your stories. So welcome to the podcast. I know you're avid listeners, obviously.
Yes.
Watchers, listeners, whatever way mm-hmm. you do listen to your podcast. Digger, firstly, we should say your real name is Derek.
Derek, yep.
Derek Gardner. Digger Garden. Did that myself. I didn't know that before. But yes, and Sean, what's your surname?
Kelly.
Sean Kelly.
Yep.
All the way from Northern Ireland.
Correct. I'm
like myself.
Yeah.
And two massive United fans. And of course, you guys do come along to the Reminiscent events every couple of weeks at the club. Sean, firstly, just tell us what that's like for you and how did you get involved, firstly?
Well, as Jason said before, around about COVID, I think there was something in the programme possibly. And they said they're going to do this thing like live on the internet and all that. So I thought, this might be okay, because I used to do something similar up at FC United. They had like a sporting memories group, which is the same thing. And I thought, well, at United, which is, you know, wouldn't it be great to be able to do it at United? Unfortunately, I wasn't just too good on the old internet. And although I got involved, I could hear everybody talk and they could hear me talk, but I couldn't see anything. But then, of course, because of the COVID, it locked down. And then managed to see it again. And I thought, well, the experience of doing all the research and having all the knowledge and then meeting people of my own age and stuff like that would be great. Because of the thing, that's the whole idea, is the reminiscence, is to help people, their memory, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And especially the sporting memories, especially Manchester United memories. Well, then I was on a winner. Love every minute of it.
And you two have known each other for quite a long time, is that right, Dick?
Well, it's only 6 years.
Oh, right.
Sean, we used to go to the FC Sporting Memories, and my wife, Pam, she had bad dementia and she eventually passed away. And obviously, I thought my life had finished, but it hadn't. United came in and back again. I'd always been a season ticket holder. I'd always been to the big games, but I couldn't get away as much as I did. But after Pam died, I started going to all the away games, if you got a ticket, it's the ticket office. Anyway, I met a lad called Matty Battle, an Irish lad, who we started going abroad with watching United. And I've been about 12 times abroad since the last 7 years. And I've met some of the fantastic people in that last time. The first game was 1946, on my 7th birthday. My dad gave me a surprise and said, I'm taking you somewhere. So me and my elder brother go to get back in our house at 12 o'clock. We get a bus to town. Never been as far as Colliers. After Colliers, we get into Piccadilly. Walk across Piccadilly. I saw this big statue of Queen Victoria. We go to A-Town Street. I only know this after. A line of buses matched, it says. So I knew I was going to a football match. It stops at Main Road and I'm thinking, Main Road, that's where City play. I didn't realise United played there after a while. So the first game was, they played Arsenal and they won 5-2. Jack Rowley scored 2, Johnny Allen scored 2, and the right winger was called Billy Wrigglesworth, and he scored 1. And I used to call him Wigglesworth, which made my dad laugh. Anyway, from then, my dad took me to a few games at Main Road, but it got too much for him. The crowd was too big. So we started going to Old Trafford to watch the reserves, and that's when I really got the bug. Yeah. 1949 came, they came back to Old Trafford, and from then on, the 50s was the finest decade of Manchester United, especially season 56-57. That year, we played 42 league games. We played 6 FA Cup ties and 8 in Europe. I was very lucky to only miss 5 of them. I missed the Portsmouth game in this country because it was too near Christmas. And I didn't go any abroad games. But some of them games, especially Bilbao. People have mentioned Bilbao, I'm sure, before. That was a time they'd gone to Bilbao and we got beat 5-3. It was 5-2 until the last few minutes when Billy Whelan, my favourite inside forward ever, scored the third goal. We came back main road. We had to win by 3 clear goals to progress. The away goal didn't count then. So anyway, we get in main road. You had to get there early because it was a sellout. I think there was more people outside than inside. And I stood on the halfway line. And this is where, later on in later years, talking to Tom Clare, and Tom had been on stood on the halfway. So we must have been near each other. Anyway, remember, United battered him, and he didn't score until about 5 minutes before half-time. And Busby had said to Duncan Edwards, get forward. And Duncan get forward, he hit the ball, the goalkeeper touched it onto the post, come out, and Dennis Violet whipped it in. So it's 1-1 at half-time. They come out in the second half, we're battering them again, and it went until the 70th minute when Tommy made it 5-5, you know. So then we've got to get the winner, otherwise the next game would have been in Paris. It was good because they didn't, you know, they'd selected Paris for the day. Anyway, Busby must have said something. Tommy Taylor and Johnny Berry changed positions. And I'm thinking, what's Tommy Taylor doing on the right wing? And Tommy got the ball near where I was stood, and he went down the wing, he beat one man, and he saw Johnny Berry running in, and he crossed the ball, and Johnny Berry just tapped it in. Well, the noise. They reckon they could hear it in Oldham. I don't know how true that was, but they certainly could hear it in Albert Square. And obviously, I've never been in a crowd so excited. I can still feel my air.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when you recount that memory, can you vividly see that in your mind?
Definitely, yeah, definitely. I can see Tommy now passing the ball and Johnny Berry scoring the goal.
Is this what happens in the reminiscing sessions? You just start sharing memories and then Sean would you then pick up one and be like, oh, I remember that, but also, and then build and...
Or I might talk about a particular game and then sort of like someone would say something about the game, you know, and then you can add to that, you know, or you might, a few weeks ago, in fact, we had a lady who came for the first time and she actually mentioned to me that I think it was her nephew had played for United. So I said, well, what's his name? And she told me his name. And I said, did you know he played for Duncan Edwards? And she said, what? I said, he played with Duncan Edwards. I said, I never knew that. I said, he played in the youth team. And in fact, it was a chap who, if you go at Carrington, where they have the big photograph on the wall of the youth team, he's in that picture, and she didn't even know. So like, although it was the reminiscence group, it was great for her. And then because I like to collect stuff on United, I had loads of photographs of him, which she didn't have. So I actually brought him in to the next group, and it was only like, and she'd forgotten about that, and I put them all on the table. She was just absolutely delighted. And then, of course, it's not only the memory of the game, it's the memory of who you were with, like your parents or your brother or whoever you actually went to that game. And that then expands the whole thing for that person who's, you know, like myself. And I can't remember what happened last week, but if you ask me,
you can remember every goal in 1960.
The United team against Villa in 1955, but
what was your first game, Sean?
The first game. I'm originally from Northern Ireland, and the first time I actually saw United play was in a friendly in 1963, because I'm a bit later born than Derek. I was 47, so I was about 16 at the time, and it was the time of the big winter. You're all too young to remember. It was the time of the big winter freeze. And United actually went over to Ireland and played a couple of games. Paddy Crearn played his first ever game for Man United in Cork in a friendly. And then they came up to Dublin and they played Coventry City. And I went to the game in Dublin. It was at Shamrock Rovers ground. We played Coventry and we drew 2-2. Bobby Charlton scored twice.
So, Digger, you've said the 1950s was your favourite era, the most exciting. Of course, you're younger then as well, so you've no worries, do you?
That's right, yeah.
What about yourself?
Well, I came over for the Liverpool game in 65 and I decided to move to Manchester. I wanted to watch United, basically.
So you moved to Manchester because you loved the club?
I had a job to go to a pass in Northern Ireland in my time. There was an exam you could take, which was a civil service exam. If you passed the civil service exam, that guaranteed you a job in England in the civil service. I passed. The only problem was you either went to London or you went to Birmingham. I had a couple of pals who were maybe 3 months older than me. One went to London, one went to Birmingham. They were home in a week. So I thought, forget that. If I go to Manchester, I'm going to watch United. I'm going to meet people. So I decided to scrub the... I wish I hadn't, because I would have had the pension now. But United had made up for that. So I came to Manchester in February 66. And I just went everywhere and anywhere. And for my 21st birthday...
Sean, did you come over on your own?
Yes. Came over on my own. And I went
just to... Just done like a suitcase and just...
A suitcase. In fairness...
Did you have any digs?
No digs. My sister came over with me on the boat and went back the same night. And I was based, I went and got a place in Cheltenham Hardy, a bed sit. I was in a bed sit. Wow. Yeah, I was just only 18. I remember the first Wednesday night after I got my job, I was getting paid on the Thursday. I had to ask the office manager on the Wednesday night for the money, to loan me some money to get me back to my apartment and back in on the next morning. Because I hadn't a cent, not one penny. Had to ask him.
Because you went, you'd love a United going to the games.
Well, no,
spending your money.
I hadn't even started the games. Well, I've started the games, but this was my first job. No, I got a job right away. There was no problem. I got a job right away.
On jobs, Digo, I know you were a policeman.
Yes.
And you worked with Maisie's dad, which in itself is great.
David's dad worked on the B division, as I worked on the A division.
We've
come across each other lots. The division next to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, jobs crosswise, and we should enjoy a pint together after work.
It's really cool, isn't it?
You know what? But the thing that as he was having his makeup done to make him look a little bit younger. I mean, Sean has been there for an hour, and I still can't do anything with him, to be fair. But I put my dad on FaceTime, and it's like, you know, my dad's face lit up. My mum chipping on in the background, like, who's that? Shut up, mum. Stay out of this. This is my dad's time. And just to see my dad's face.
Aww.
I don't even know the last time you saw my dad. Must be
a good while ago.
So when you worked with Maisie's dad, was Maisie playing at United then?
No. It was only later when he came.
Yeah.
When David came, joined United, I was at a couple of games with your dad.
Right.
I think it may have been in Barnsley.
Right.
And I met your dad at Barnsley. But... When you came, come from Blackburn?
Yeah.
Everybody thought, who's this David May? Anyway.
Superstar?
It turned out pretty good. Yeah, like Johnny did.
What's your memories of Cadbury's?
Oh, well, as a child, obviously, but the biggest thing with Cadbury's is I'm one of three sisters. Two of them emigrated to America.
Are you going overseas in a few weeks?
Huh? And I'm going to see one in a few weeks. She's 60 years married.
Yeah.
So we're going over on the 17th of June. And I will be doing, as I always did, because in the USA, especially maybe the last 10 or 15 years, I think maybe it's become a little bit better. But any time we left here to go to the USA, and I've had two sisters in the USA, one in New York and one in Springfield, Chicago.
You take your Cadbury's, that's what you're going to say?
One suitcase.
It's an Irish thing, isn't it?
One suitcase full of Cadbury's. One suitcase full of Cadbury's. And my wife would always make a Christmas cake, even though it was June, the Christmas cake. So Cadbury's and them. And the biggest thing was, when we would go, say, for example, we might fly to New York first. So when we get to New York, the Cadbury's would be in the suitcase. But the Cadbury's was with both families. So the one in New York, Eugene, he'd be ringing the ones in Chicago and saying, we've got the box. There won't be much of this coming up to Chicago. And when my nieces and nephews were all small, used to have so much fun. Because at nighttime, I'd sit down and Eugene would have hidden the Cadbury's around the house, up the chimney, in the couch. And for about 2 hours, they'd be going around, honestly. And I will be going on the 17th of June and... It's my sister's 60th wedding anniversary. It'll be a thing of Cadbury's. We're all getting together. But again, they'll have their own friends from America. And even when we go, they'll say, have you brought us any crunchy bars? Have you brought us any fruit?
Yeah,
and
nut? Yeah.
Honestly, it's always...
It must be an Irish thing. I went to Dubai.
Well, the Irish have the sweet tooth, don't they?
Well, I went to Dubai a couple of weeks ago for the international break I went with Johnny, but I went to see my friend. And before I left, she was like, can you bring me some Cadbury's? Like, this is a thing that we do.
The first time I tasted chocolate properly was when my dad got demobbed. He brought a tin box home. I brought a tin box home.
No, he got demobbed.
Demobbed. From the army.
Oh, right, okay.
After the war.
Right. You know,
he served 12 months after the war, and then he got demobbed. Well, that's when he you know, me kick him out. So. Anyway, it happened on a Thursday. I remember it as vivid as yesterday. Me and my brother used to always go to the pitching house on a Thursday night to watch your mother, Riley. And my mother said, your dad's coming home tonight. But my elder brother went to the pitches and I stayed at home waiting for my dad. And I'm sat on the front doorstep and all of a sudden I see this fella. And he was in his army uniform then, although he'd been demobbed. And he comes up, gives me a hug, gives my mother a hug. Then he gives me a tin box. I opened the tin box. It was full of chocolate. Mm. I've not seen it. And I wolfed most of it before my brother come home. You know?
That was a good decision that night, so, wasn't it?
Digger, obviously we've been talking about lots of memories. And I've got, hidden behind me...
Oh, was it by magic?
Go. You've written a book?
Yes, yes.
But is 75 years of following Manchester United. Yes. Let's do the obvious thing first. Where can people get this book?
Through Amazon.
Through Amazon, if you've heard of that. That's where you can get this book. Niche little place.
And all the proceeds go to the Munich Foundation.
There we go. That's perfect, isn't it?
That's what we want. More money.
But this is only part one, I should say. Yeah, this only takes you up to 1968.
I'm trying to do part two, but unfortunately Tom passed away.
Yes.
And we're struggling to...
I was going
to
say, you wrote it with Tom Clare.
Yes.
Who we're going to see a video from soon. It's almost to the day a year ago that he passed away. And he was a huge figure, obviously, at Manchester United.
He was, yes.
Someone who was known throughout the community, made the pilgrimage to Manchester Platz, I think every year, but obviously moved on to Texas, so wasn't quite so local. But what was that experience like writing the book with him?
Well, I first met Tom about 5 years ago, I think, at Old Trafford, the cricket ground, where there was a function for previous players. And Matt Battle introduced me to Tom. And after the function, me and Tom went to a side and we started talking. And Tom said about his memories of Manchester United, and he asked me mine. And he said, well, the hell, Digger. He said, you know as much as I do. And then we talked about the Bilbao game, our favourite game. And then he said he was on the halfway line, so he was on the halfway line. So we must have been more or less next to each other on the game. So he said to me, why don't you write a book? I said, I've not got a clue how to write. He said, I'll help you. So what Tom used to do, he used to send like 25 questions and I'd answer them, send them back through my son, actually, Paul, because I'm not on social media and everything. And he put it more or less all my memories together and found a book. And like I say, all the money goes to the foundation. So I became good friends with Tom and we met him every time Tom came over at the functions. And then, unfortunately, as we all know, he passed away.
Yeah.
But what a lovely man, lovely, lovely man.
We're going to watch a video from him now that we haven't seen. It's from an interview with him where he's talking about his heroes, and a lot of it mirrors the stories we've heard from you guys. But of course, he's talking about the Busby Babes.
That was my first away game. I'd got up there with a gang of lads up from Cheltenham and lock up through Deepdale. We went on the train from Victoria Station. And when we got to Preston, it was absolutely throwing it down. We walked around and we were towards the centre line and just by the dugout, actually. And when the teams come out, the trainer got his set up there and he happened to see me there soaking wet. And he actually pulled me in. And, he said, you're going to get your mortgage coming in. And he sat me in the dugout. What happened with David, when he was coming off at half time, he saw me sat in the dugout. And he said to me, how the bloody hell do you do it? He said, are you here again? He said, look, he said, you've got the best seat in the house sort of thing, you know. And that was as he walked off at half time, you know. And you got to know these players. And it was the other story with Johnny Berry about when I was playing schools football. I was a goalkeeper and I'd dived at somebody's feet when I was a kid and I'd broken my arm, and I had this plaster cast on, and I always remembered it was one of the games. I was outside the main entrance when the players come out after a game, and Johnny actually saw me with this plaster cast, and he said to me, he said, what the bloody hell have you done? You know, he said, what have you been up to? And I told him, you know, and he said, oh, you've got to be careful doing nice. And he said, here, let me sign your plaster cast. And then when he signed, he said, I'll tell you what. He said, just come inside. And I came inside. And the next minute, he was getting people to come out and sign the plaster cast. You know, I just wish I had that plaster cast today. You know, it would have been worth a small fortune. But again, what used to happen, the married boys in the Busby Babes team, they used to drift away quickly after a game. But you get the single lads, you know, they'd have friends at matches and stuff like this. There were many, many times that I followed Eddie Coleman off down from Old Trafford, down Trafford Road, to Archie Street where he lived. And we'd be walking down Trafford Road and Eddie'd be around 100 meters in front of me. And he'd stop and I'd stop. And it was like a dog following his master, you know. Eddie would stop and I'd stop and he'd look behind and he'd just carry on, you know, and then he'd get to Archie Street, turn down Archie Street and go home, you know. But that was the fascination with it, you know, that was the sort of bond that you had with these players. You couldn't do it today.
Oh, she has another piece.
Helen, while we were watching that video of Tom has indulged in some chocolate now.
She's, I was going to say, this cover's from 2003, that's the one I remember, but there's lots of different wrappers there.
Yeah, it's just
from
the packaging. It's not actually, you've not got 21-year-old.
No. The chocolates are very fresh.
Yeah.
Very much
Sean
doubt.
And I share a little bit.
Very much doubt she'd have a bar of chocolate for 21 years.
Dick, what was it like watching that video and seeing Tom?
It brought back good memories and tears to my eye. Because although I didn't know Tom that well, I got to know him as though he was my brother. You know, like I say, reminiscing of the 50s. I mean, it's not like today. Like you said, you could meet the players, and I met the players on several occasions. And the biggest time was when we used to go dancing at Sale Locarno, when half the football team used to go on a Saturday night, you know. And we used to hate it when they go, because all the birds would be around the players and they wouldn't bother with us.
Where was this?
This is at Sale Locarno.
Sale Locarno.
And
right.
One of the biggest memories I have was with Tommy Taylor. Tommy had just been selected to play for England, and he was. Had the number 8 on his back, and Nat Loftus had the number 9 on. And I said to Tommy, what's it like playing for England with the number 8 on your back? And Tommy's words were, he swore, but I won't say the swear word. He said, I'd play in the effing net as long as they get me 100 quid. Because he got 100 quid playing for England and 20 quid playing for United. But we met the players, we met them on the train. And one thing, what I regret happened, I had a big book and I got all the autographs of the Babes. Every one of them. Wood, Folksburn, Coleman, Jones, Edwards, Berry, Whelan, Taylor, Violet and Peg, Blanche Flower, Morgans, Charlton, they was at reserves. And in his book, it was an old scrapbook. And there was a young boy, Paulie, in the hospital. And I took the book down and lent it him while he was in hospital. Unfortunately, I never got it back. You know, and I didn't have the art to go and find out where.
Yeah.
And if I would have had that today, it would have been, you know.
Yeah.
But the Babes then, they would meet you. And after the game, outside Old Trafford, where the Munich Tunnel is, we used to play football with a plastic ball, about 12 of us, before we went dancing at Sale Locarno. Because we used to always leave our suits in the toilets of Piccadilly, where they had lockers. So you could go, we'd go up march, go back to the Piccadilly, get changed into our suits and then go to the dancing. And we used to play football outside and the players had come out. And I remember one, David Pegg coming out with his left foot. And next minute, Busby come out and said, hey, David, how are you? He didn't want them kicking the ball with us. But another thing about the Babes, we tried to form a United Supporters Club, but Busby wouldn't allow it because he said he didn't have the override FA, we got in trouble. So we formed an unofficial one. And we used to meet at Bexley Square in Salford. And then from there, we used to meet in pubs in town. And it went from about 20 of us to about 40 of us. And we used to always go to the away games on the train. But then we started going on a coach, Sail Away Lingleys. And they also took United. So if we went to London, we'd always go down on a Friday night. Because if you went down on a Saturday morning on a football special, I think it was £3. But if you went down on a Friday night, it was only 30 shilling. Because, you know, we used to get in London at 6:10 in the morning.
What? Just tell us what 30 shilling is.
Sorry?
What's 30 shilling?
Yes. £1.50.
£1.50,
So what would it be nowadays? So we always used to go to Lyons' Cafe for our breakfast. And they got to know us because we went that many times to London, you know. And like I say, them days, you could stand on the Cop, you could stand at Highbury, you could stand anywhere. And the game before Munich, I don't know if I mentioned this before, when we beat Arsenal 5-4, although it wasn't the Bud Folks Burn, it was, I think Blanchflower played, I think Scanlon played, I think Kenny Morgan's played. And we won 5-4. And we were stood with all the Arsenal fans. And an Arsenal fan came to me after, and he shook me and he said, well, he said, that's the finest football exhibition I have seen. If this team went to the boat race, they'd win it. You know, I've heard other people say that. You know, and that was...
Makes me feel really
and that time so sad. Was just before Munich, and we all know what happened at Munich. Yeah, and that was a terrible...
Darkest day terrible in the club's history, days in our life.
You touch on Munich there, the darkest day in Manchester United's history. What can you remember of that?
Well, I was a plumber at the ICI, and or an apprentice plumber. And on a Thursday, we used to go to Ardman Street in town for college for a day's tuition sort of town. And my tutor was a man called Mr. Leatherland, and he was a big Burnley fan. Now, Burnley at that time had a good side. In fact, they knocked us out of the cup, you know, one of the best games ever. And he used to always, we used to have a lot of banter about United. And he said, Derek, he said, well, he called me Digger, I've got some bad news for you. He said, United have crashed. And I thought he was joking at her. And I said, you're joking? He said, no, no. He said, and I believe there's a few died. Well, I was 17 and 18, and a tear came in my eye. And he said, you better go home. And I remember walking up Quay Street onto Deansgate, and it was deadly hush. The traffic had seemed to have stopped. And I remember a newspaper seller shouting, read all about it, never do. United in crash, you know, and I'm thinking. And I get on a bus home, and I go into my home. I lived in Blakely then. And I go in the house. My dad was a big red. My mother was a big red. My brother, elder brother. And they're all with tears in their eyes. And it was, you know. And that next day, I couldn't go to work. And I remember walking for miles, just buying paper after paper after paper to read about it. And then, obviously, so many had died. And then Duncan was hanging on, and so was Matt. And then we come to the Sheffield Wednesday game. Now, that game, never been to a game like it. From one minute when it's deadly hush, everybody in tears, to elation when we won 3-0. And that goal that Shea Brennan scored in the corner, he didn't score it. Tommy Taylor scored that. He's header, you know, and because the ball went straight in the net.
What was your thoughts? What was
well,
your
I would
memories?
Only been 11 at the time. It might have been, say, for example, the next morning, rather than hearing about it coming home from school, it might have been the next morning, because our neighbours next door, they used to get the English papers. We didn't. My mum and dad would buy the Irish, but they would buy it. And that's how I used to get my scrapbooks. They used to put the English paper, once they'd read it, they put
the
it through.
Section, yeah.
They put it through our letterbox, and that probably would have been the first time I would have seen it. Yeah. But of course, by that time then, like from the cup final in May to come back to February then afterwards, and especially Greg joining them and all the talk about, and then of course it was every day about the Munich air disaster, and as Derek said about Duncan being in the hospital and trying to survive, and Greg's bravery and all that was massive in Ireland, of course, because, you know, all of Ireland's still a small country, and yet to have this great team that was around, they were so proud to have like three players who were, you know. And the other thing about which goes under the thing a little bit about Munich is that with the Munich air disaster, because it was February, you were coming up to the World Cup in 1958 in England. No Roger Byrne, no Tommy Taylor, and Duncan. And like England were going into that competition thinking, I think that they had a chance, and yet they'd lost three of their best players. Yeah. Well, the way the club came back was just tremendous. Yeah. It was tremendous. And I remember being here, I think it was the 50th celebration where they did the big thing at the club. And I remember coming in, and again, Harry Gregg was there.
I remember meeting him that day, yeah.
And one of the things, Harry was absolutely brilliant, because that day he spoke about the players that, if you want, came after Munich, the ones that had the responsibility of trying to get the club back to, and players that maybe were just a little bit young at the time, and they put everything into it, the effort. I mean, because of the fixture thing, because don't forget there was the European Cup as well. They still had the semi-final to play, you know, and they still had a chance. But it was brilliant the way Harry Gregg made sure that people like Ronnie Cope and Bob Harrop and Alex Dawson and people who had given absolutely, and maybe in a roundabout way, maybe didn't get the careers that they could have had because they were playing every game, and you know, the only way players are rested at the moment and all that. And when you think of some of those people, as Derek said, 3 weeks prior, they were going to the Locarno and Sale, having a dance with their mates, having a booze with their mates. And yet they were, somebody said once, he said, I couldn't believe I'm wearing Duncan Edwards' number six. How can I play? Yeah. I'm wearing Duncan Edwards' number six. So the effect that it must have had on the players as well that came after that.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I was lucky enough later on in life to meet and I met Harry many times. And I met Albert Scanlon, who actually, I met Albert many times, and the stories that they would tell you, you know. I remember Harry telling me once in his house, he got away. People think, oh, you were scot-free. But he told me himself, and it was the strangest thing. He said, there's terrible pain in my head every night when I went to bed. And he said, the only way I could get rid of the pain in my head was a tie around my forehead as hard as he could. You think that would make it more, but he said that was the only thing that he got rid of this pain in his forehead.
Wow.
Yeah, after Munich. Yeah, amazing, amazing.
And he was playing football throughout this time as
and
well.
He played football within 12 days, him and Billy Fox.
I think it makes it more poignant that the fact that when you think of the Munich tunnel now.
Absolutely.
That you were playing football with them lads. Only a few weeks before, and you're out in town having a drink with them, and they're just are like your best mates.
Yeah,
how good were they?
The Babes, I mean, for my money, this Trinity.
Would they be compare it to say the '92 team, the '99 team, 2018?
I would say they were better because they seem to be. They kept the positions. He was like two full-backs, three half-backs, forwards. The two inside forwards that helped back, you know, and the centre forwards. And they played football on a muddy ground with an heavy ball. And some of the goals, I can remember, still see some of the goals he scored now. They was absolutely tremendous. And people have asked me, what would be my best ever Manchester United team? And I give it a lot of thought, and I pick for Peter Schmeichel, Johnny Carey, Roger Byrne, Roy Keane, Yap Stam, Duncan Edwards, Georgie Best, Billy Whelan, Tommy Taylor, Dennis Violet and Bobby Charlton. That would be my best. I know I'm leaving out Dennis Law, Brian Robson.
And who would Kent be the manager of that team?
Manager would have to be Fergie, I think.
Okay. That's
with an assistant of Jimmy Murphy.
Okay.
I was just saying there, one of the things about not having seen that team, but having read a lot about it, and one of the biggest things is, if you read some of the interviews about the Real Madrid team that won the first five European Cups, the great players, Puskas, Di Stefano, Santa Maria, Hento, all them, if you read any books about them playing United, when they played against United in the semi-final of the European Cup, they were scared.
They were.
That's how good you... You hear the quotes afterwards from people like Di Stefano and Puskas saying this was the team that was going to take over from us.
We're going to have to wrap it up. I was going to ask you your favourite players, but Digger, you've given me a whole team which I absolutely love. Can you do the same, Sean? Well,
it's on me tie. I don't need to give you my favourite player.
Well, he's put Schmeichel in goal, so you can change positions. It's up to you.
Give your all-time 11,
change players.
I know it's tough.
It's so tough because the thing about Manchester United is you can't do that. We have had so many great players. You've got to do it in a 10 or 15 year span.
Well, different. The players you've seen, best goalkeeper.
The best goalkeeper I've seen is definitely Schmeichel.
Best right back. I'm going to go through it all here, so you might as well just give us your team, Sean.
The best right back I've seen.
A little bit of
Dennis
off.
Irwin.
Yes. Centre backs.
The best left back, definitely Tony Dunn, 1968 team. Centre backs. Vidic would have to be one of them. See, I can't say the Babes because I didn't see him.
No,
that's fair enough.
No, we're all right.
Vidic and Paul McGrath.
Some player.
Keane would have to be in it, without a shadow of a doubt. Ronaldo would have to be in it.
Robbo?
George would have to be in it. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No, but
we're not counting here, by the way, so just be careful.
I think I'm up to about 15 now. Yeah. It's so difficult. Eric, absolutely fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. It's just
what Scholes, you just think Scholes in there.
You need
a striker.
I think you need two midfielders now to go with Roy, because you've got a front three of Eric, Ronaldo and George Best. Yeah. Then you've got Roy Keane. You did your back four, so I think you're short two midfielders, central.
Well, you're gonna have players. I would probably go,
I think they're playing fly goal here.
I'd probably go,
that's 11.
Because of the way we've set that team out now, probably have to go with maybe Beckham and Giggs, but then you're leaving out Scholes.
Yeah, well, you can't pick them all, like you say.
You've got six Scholes in there. Leave Becks out, drop Ronaldo down the right. That way.
It is, it's the most, when people say that, I always say.
It's impossible.
Yeah,
it is.
Because again, at the memories groups that we've been to, we've done this, but what we've always done, so, right?
60s, correct. 70s, yeah.
There's your 60s team, there's your 70s team, there's your 80s team.
Yeah.
Well, listen, can we come to one?
Absolutely.
Can we come to one of your reminiscing sessions?
Sure, yeah. Well, you said there's only 10, so, I'm sure you can squeeze
another. You could fit in another three, couldn't you?
Absolutely.
You can fit another three of us in.
Yeah. We'll bring the chocolate.
They'll bring the chocolate.
There is no doubt about it. The groups.
Does it help?
Absolutely. Of course it does, yeah.
Because let's get back to why we're doing our list.
That's the whole thing about it. Yeah. Because you can get situations where you go one week and you might see someone and he might not say anything, but then he comes the following week and something crops up in that conversation. And then once he or she opens up, once they've opened up then, and then they see the same faces again the following 3 weeks. And you come in, they have the cup of coffee, as Jason said, they sit down and say, how are you? And then you go on. And then they also come along and then they'll have memories. And that's where it comes from.
Do they ever get a word in edgeways with you two?
No, really not.
No.
Because like we've said for the last hour and a half and never spoke.
Jason is brilliant.
They usually leave a little note. This is what I wanted to say.
Well, we're coming 1 week.
Yeah.
No, it is.
Honestly, thank you both so much for sharing your stories with us.
It's been a pleasure for me. I mean, since, like I said, since my wife died, forget my family, United, and I want tickets for every away game, not just for you, not just a few.
What do you need, Crystal Palace?
I need Crystal Palace.
Okay. And you also put the biggest smile on my dad's face.
That's brilliant. I didn't know it. Well, I knew he'd remember me.
Brilliant.
So we hope to see you there.
Brilliant.
Troops, it's been a pleasure.
There. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks
indeed.
Very much. Thank you for having us.
If they're not, you could have given us a lift in.
What an absolute pleasure to hear from Sean and Digger. We'll talk a little bit more about that later, but we're going to hear from you, the fans, and we're going to read out a letter, which I haven't actually seen yet. So I'm going to get handed that letter, and it's from Claire. And as we all know, football brings people together, as we've spoken about, and can often provide some escapism. And it's an anchor in a lot of people's lives. So let's have a little look at this letter. Hi, my name is Claire Jackson and this is about my mum. My mum was called Joan Waite and grew up in Withenshaw. She was a total Man United fan her whole life. Her mum used to work at the Supporters Club in the 1960s and 70s. At the age of 85 and very deaf, she drove us all mad with the MUTV channel on full blast 24/7. In 2020, she suffered a series of mini strokes in hospital and after a hip operation suffered sudden onset vascular dementia. For the last 3 years, despite everything, she stayed at home and had to have her carer visits planned around the football. She would tolerate them coming in at half time at a push, but by the second half, they were out the door. Being a Withenshaw girl and a great pundit on the game, her heart belonged to Marcus Rashford. His skill, attitude and public work were all she talked about some days. She has sadly now passed, but I just want you to know that he made her so happy through all her pain and confusion. And so we benefited from that too. Please keep up your superb work, Marcus. I'm sending you my mum's love, Claire Jackson. Aww,
isn't that lovely?
That is so lovely.
One absolute hero.
Yeah.
I absolutely love the idea of just about tolerated people coming in at half time.
And I love that she was 85 and had MUTD on for a blast.
You can absolutely see it. That's
right. Get out.
Yeah. That's it. Oh, not
Claire,
now.
Thank you so much for sending us that really lovely letter thank and the you. Lovely memories. And hopefully we can get that passed on to Marcus as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great idea, Helen. So I've got a letter to read you as well, because United and Cadbury have been running a competition. They've been asking fans to submit their favourite United and Cadbury memories. Mm-hmm. And there were hundreds of entries submitted, but we can only read one. So we're going to hear Kim Jeff's. Here you go. You ready? In 2012, I began to follow Manchester United because of my friend who introduced me to them. That friend is now my husband.
Oh, nice.
I knew you'd like that.
Sorry.
I live in the west coast of the United States of America and began to watch Manchester United rather than listening via the radio. For my birthday in 2015, my husband sent me a team jersey with the number 7. He told me that the number 7 was an important number. He also told me that my birthday, the 6th of February, was a date that will live in his memory forever because of the Munich air disaster. I moved to the UK and married my best friend, and we always watch United together. I will miss these times as my husband's cancer has returned, and as my husband puts it, no get out of jail free card this time around. I will miss my husband watching Manchester United next season. These are my greatest memories. My favourite Cadbury memory is also my husband. He loves dairy milk bars. In 2021, my husband was diagnosed with cancer. In 2022, he underwent 4 rounds of chemo, and in May 2022, he underwent surgery to remove most of his stomach. Unfortunately, he has lost his battle and his cancer has returned. Dairy milk bars will remind me of his real pleasure.
Aww.
Well, that is really sad.
Mm.
It was really lovely.
Really, really sad.
Yeah. But what genuinely wonderful things to remember and have to connect you.
I know. Kim, Jeffs, thank you so much for reaching out to us as well.
Push your life into perspective.
Yeah.
It does. Okay, we do have one more person to listen to, and I'm sure some of you will remember the name Scott Robertson. He got in touch with us to tell us about his cancer battle, and we do have some good news actually from Scott, so we're going to play this little message from him.
Hi everyone at the United Podcast, it's me again, it's Scott Robertson. Just wanted to start the message off by saying thanks very much for your message of support when I was away to go into hospital to get more treatment done. That was really nice of you all and greatly appreciated. The process went good. The doctors are all happy with how everything went, and I got in and out of the hospital relatively pretty quick and in good shape, good spirits. So hopefully this time all the treatment does the job and we'll get on the road to recovery and fully fit. And yeah, hopefully this is the end of it all. So I've been told to get in touch just to give you my early memories of Man United, and I remember growing up, I loved Lee Sharp. Lee Sharp was, I don't know if it was the celebration or just the way he was when he played, but he was my favourite player to start off with. And my best memories of watching United when I was younger was I used to love Sunday nights, 4 o'clock. I always remember it was 4 o'clock kickoffs, tea time kickoffs, especially the Arsenal away games. I used to love sitting watching Arsenal away. I still remember sitting in the living room with my two brothers and my dad doing the ironing, me and my brother shouting at the TV, watching the 4 o'clock game, hopefully getting the 3 points, and then the new Simpsons episode after that, and then Dream Team after that was the ritual. So yeah, I used to absolutely love that 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon game. It used to be brilliant. And Maisie, I've still not forgotten. I will, once I get up fully fit, get the energy levels up, get the strength levels up. We'll need to get that game of golf sorted. But yeah, like I said, thanks very much again for all your support, and your message meant a lot, and I will speak to you soon. Thank you very much.
Great news. Thank you, Brilliant. Scott.
Really good news.
This episode has been a genuine emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, it has.
One of my favourites ever.
Yeah? Big words.
Loved that. Did. Loved it. Yeah. Love hearing from Sean and Digger, and I can't wait to go to the reminiscence session.
Yeah.
Do you know what I just thought of? I can't believe we've got the whole way to the end and no one has said their favourite chocolate bar. Go. Should not take this long. Star bar.
Star bar?
Yeah.
Was it? Sure. I don't know what that is.
C.
What do you mean C? What does that mean?
Star bar is the class.
Do you know who else's favourite chocolate bar is a star bar? Roy Keane. Kindred Spirits. What's your favourite chocolate bar?
Oh, I don't
the
know.
The vegan one, obviously.
Yeah,
the vegan range. The vegan Cadbury's range.
Oh, yeah, they do them.
They do.
Not real chocolate, like, but you know, vegan, isn't it? It's not
May say, go, what's your favourite?
I'll stick to the finger and fudge.
Fudge?
Finger and fudge.
Oh, right.
It's been a long episode. I'd forgotten about that. And I think I was happy forgetting about it.
What?
Just you bouncing around in your seat with your big smile, singing a finger and a fudge. It wasn't expected.
Because you know what? That brings back so many memories of me being a kid, watching that little kid coming out of school playing Conkers. Because I used to play Conkers as a kid. Everybody who's around the 50-year-old age would do exactly the same. They don't do Conkers anymore,
did they? I played Conkers as a kid. I played Conkers a few summers ago.
I think we're done, guys. Yeah,
I mean, to be fair, you're about 12 now, aren't you? Mental age. Anyway,
thank you.
What a great podcast.
You have made it all the way to the end.
It's been joyous.
It's been a pleasure, as always. Sam, hit us with the info.
The information to join the reminiscence sessions will be in the show notes. So if you expand those, you'll be able to find it. If you want to get in touch with us with anything, if you want to ask for further information, if you're not sure about anything, unitedpodcast@manunited.co.uk. In the meantime, have a lovely time and we'll speak to you on the next one. Goodbye.
Bye.
See you later.